WFAE Podcasting is funded by Corporate Information Technologies, helping businesses take a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. I remember being on a U.S. Airways flight somewhere and talking to the flight attendant. She was attentive and friendly, despite the fact that she was helping to deal with the full flight. At one point, I asked her if she had been flying a long time, and she said, oh, something like 15, 20 years, and I responded with the question, all with U.S. Air? Oh, no, darling, she quickly responded, I'm a Piedmont girl, all the way. Now, that was an airline, and that's a quote, by the way. I remember that distinctly. Enough said. Her feelings are shared by lots of people in this region, and not just because Piedmont Airlines helped put Charlotte on the map by choosing the city to be a hub, its most successful hub, in fact. Nostalgia for the old Piedmont Airlines lingers and is now being fueled by both a book and a documentary, the work of Richard Eller, professor of history and head of the social science department at Catawba Valley Community College. His book is called Piedmont Airlines, A Complete History, 1948 to 1989. The documentary is titled simply Speedbird. And Richard Eller joins us for the hour. Morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
Your documentary, Speedbird, is being screened today at 1:30 at the Old Post Office Playhouse on Courthouse Square in Newton. I wanted to bring that up so people can go see that if they're up in that area. Also with us in our Spirit Square studio is Howard Miller, a former pilot with Piedmont Airlines. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Ronnie Macklin, former director of maintenance for Piedmont. Nice to have you here, too.
Thank you.
You wore a lot of different hats over the years, right, for Piedmont, but I guess the one you wanted to be referred to as was director of maintenance.
Right.
Okay. And now, Richard, as I understand it, Howard Miller and Ronnie Macklin, I understand their interest in the airline because they are former employees and longtime employees. Both of them started in the 50s, within a year of each other. What's yours? What spurred your interest in Piedmont to write a book and then do this documentary? It's a big undertaking.
Well, a couple of things. I grew up as a kid in Winston-Salem, so we went by Smith Reynolds Airport at least once a week. And, you know, I love watching the planes go by and that sort of thing. But actually, it sort of has something to do with you. A friend of mine and I, Jerry Goodnight, did a book on Abraham Lincoln, maybe his North Carolina paternity, and we did a half hour on your show,
right,
back in 2004, I think it was. Well, some folks read the book, and a couple of pilots were interested in there being a book on Piedmont Airlines, which at the time there wasn't. So with all that coming about, I got a call and said, would you like to come down and talk about the possibility of a book on Piedmont? I said, yeah, sure, I'd love to. And then Jerry went off to write more on the Lincoln story, and I took off on this. So that's where the book came from. And then we were doing some signing of the book and that sort of thing, and one of the pilots said to me, well, what do we do next? And at that time, I had just gotten some videotape equipment, I have a background in that, from at the community college, thanks to our president, Dr. Henshaw. And I said, well, we've got this video stuff. We could see the planes fly. You want to do a documentary on it? And that's where that came from.
Now, there are a lot of people. Time passes quickly, unfortunately. And there are a lot of people listening to this conversation today who never flew Piedmont Airlines. They don't remember Piedmont Airlines because they weren't around or cognizant of flying back when Piedmont was still flying, although it wasn't that long ago. They don't remember U.S. Air's precursor, Allegheny Airlines, certainly. They don't remember when airlines used to advertise on radio and television to get people to fly. They don't remember when flying was a wonder of modern travel and a pleasure, and people got dressed up to get on the airplane, not just the employees, but the passengers. They don't remember, in other words, when flying was special. And they look at airlines today as buses, cattle cars in the sky. Traveling on an airplane is a true hassle today, not just because of the FAA, but because of what airlines are doing to cut back on service. Tell me from your points of view, gentlemen, you work for them, what made Piedmont so special? Because I know that there was great pride among the employees of Piedmont for and about Piedmont Airlines. Who wants to start? Ronnie.
The difference at Piedmont, Howard and I both went together with Piedmont about the same time. And when in those days, I think there were 600 employees. And when we left, I think there were 24,000. They hired two more thousand to try to replace us and didn't make it. So we went on from there. But anyway, in the early days, a job was everybody's job. And that tendency has stayed with Piedmont all along. In other words, if you see something wrong, it's not your business. You better do something about it anyway. Now, other airlines don't do that.
Let me hear from you. You're a pilot. Pilots, yeah. That's a tough
job.
Well,
in the early days, we had the DC-3. It only had 24-seat passengers and one male flight attendant, because the door was a step door, and if a woman couldn't lift it up, but the male flight attendants could.
And, so in other words, when the door opened, you had to pull – when the door closed, you had to pull the stairs up into the airplane.
By chain, and the male pursers could do that. Right. We called them pursers then. And as a co-pilot, you did other things other than just in the cockpit. Sometimes we would help with the baggage. And I started in 1954, I believe about a year before Ronnie. Is that right? And we had 500 employees then. So I always felt that Mr. Davis had a good feeling about the people he hired and put in management positions.
Mr. Davis is Tom Davis.
Tom Davis, right.
Started the airline.
Yeah, he was the president and founder of Piedmont
Airlines. And his philosophy became the corporate culture.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it was a philosophy of be thrifty, watch your pennies, but also make sure that the customer is handled properly.
Mm-hmm.
But watch your pennies, he said that two or three times.
Put your headphones on for a second, because I know a lot of people have memories about flying Piedmont or working for Piedmont, and we have a caller. We haven't even asked for calls yet, but Antonio is on the line, and I think you were a flight attendant for Piedmont. Is that correct?
Yes. I started with Piedmont right out of college. The day after I graduated, I got a job with Piedmont in 1986. And I'm still a flight attendant today with U.S. Airways. And once you become a Piedmont employee, I don't care. You could have had 9 mergers. You still feel like you work for Piedmont in your heart.
Well, I got to tell you, the stewardess that I had that I referenced in the opening, she was adamant about it. We talked for a little longer than what I put in the opening. She wasn't fighting U.S. Airways, but she was a Piedmont person, period.
Well, one of the things, I'm from Winston-Salem, too. So there's two things that stand out listening to your conversation with those guys over there that set the standard for us when we came on. The first thing is that I was born in Winston, well, I was raised in Winston-Salem and grew up in Winston-Salem. And the older people always tell you, if you get a job with Piedmont Airlines or RJ Reynolds, you're set for life. And it sticks with you as a, you know, you're going to college, you could go to college in California, you come back. If you got a job, you were so excited. And one of the things that the second thing is that Piedmont instilled in the flight that you wanted to go to work. You couldn't wait to go to work because it's the way they treated you. And that is missing in a lot of jobs today, in a lot of companies today. And it stays with you. So one of the things Mr. Davis used to tell us back in the day, that when you get on that plane as an employee with Piedmont, you treat the people as if they were coming into your house. And that's what we did. Mm. And I think, you know, you talked about the flight attendant earlier. I think that the spirit of being a flight attendant with Piedmont, I go to work, and like you said, Mike, today it's changed. You know, people don't get on there. It's like a best cattle call. I still try to treat people with that spirit that was instilled in me by Mr. Davis.
Mm.
And it, you know, and that's how you work. That's how you do it. No matter who you work for. And I'm proud to be with U.S. Airways, but Piedmont's in my heart. It's in the way I work.
Thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. You did a lot of talking, Richard Eller, to a lot of people for this documentary and this book. You've heard this before, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. I've never seen a company like this where the first generation who come along that pulled together, because they didn't have much. They worked very hard, and they did other folks' jobs. But the interesting thing for me is when the next generation and then the next generation came along, they carried that same esprit de corps.
You know, as I watched your documentary yesterday, it reminded me very much of broadcasting, because up until deregulation of the broadcasting industry, radio and television was a cottage industry. You could only own 7 stations in the whole country. You could own, I think, 5 AMs and 2 FMs. You could own a television station, but you couldn't necessarily own those in the same market. And if you owned a newspaper, you couldn't own these things in the same market. But you were limited to 7 stations. Today, Clear Channel owns 3,000 radio stations in the country. And it's the same thing that happened to the airline industry. When it was a cottage industry, broadcasting was fun to work in. And I had the privilege of working for some companies like Piedmont, where it was truly a family and where the management took care of the people that worked for them. I have some examples that I won't go into, but it was truly a family. That's gone today. And it's because of deregulation and mergers and being able to own, being able to control vast amounts of the territory as opposed to just small amounts of the territory.
Of course, the interesting thing about Piedmont is when they got big in the 80s, and your caller referenced that, he joined in 86 toward the end of the Piedmont era. They maintained that. You know, they got big, but they didn't get corporate. They still had that family atmosphere.
And we're going to talk about the mergers that led to the buildup that deregulation brought on and allowed Piedmont to grow by leaps and bounds, but it also led to the eventual demise of the airline. Let's go back to the beginnings. 1948. This is when it started, and it started with Tom Wilson, who you've already referenced. And if you go to a website called Jet Piedmont, which was created as a tribute to Piedmont Airlines, it says, on a cold day in February 1948, a small DC-3 took to the skies over Wilmington, North Carolina, en route to Cincinnati, Ohio, with intermediate stops in Southern Pines, Charlotte, and Asheville, Tri-Cities, Tennessee, and Lexington, Kentucky. Piedmont Flight 41, that was the first flight, was carrying one paying passenger, the founder of the airline, T.H. Davis, who was not yet 30 years old. I think he was 26, is that right? 27?
Or 1918,
20. No, 30. You have to be 30.
29, yeah.
Okay. And a handful of local dignitaries. If the airline was founded in Winston-Salem, which it was, why does the first flight go from Wilmington to someplace in Tennessee?
We were supposed to be an east-west. See, no one flew east-west
and
around our area. So we were going to go east-west, and that's what we did.
It was called an air bridge. They were going to go across the Appalachians because most people went around. And then they were starting in Wilmington, going to end up in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was New Bern to Lexington, Kentucky?
I forget, I get them mixed up.
But
it was Louisville.
Louisville.
And so that was the innovation that Tom Davis wanted to bring is his air bridge across the Appalachians.
Let's talk about him for a second because he's the progenitor of all this. And he was 9 years old when he was in a crowd of 25,000 people who had gathered, I think, in Winston-Salem to greet Charles Lindbergh.
Haynes Park.
But he was already a fan of aviation. Why? What do we know why he was so fascinated with flying?
They think it's because he admired Lindbergh. And when Lindbergh came to town and he got to see him and so on, that was the spark that needed to ignite right there.
And he was a pilot himself. He became a pilot.
Not
for the airline, but he became a pilot himself. Right?
And later, a flight instructor.
Later.
Okay. He was a flight instructor when he was in college in Arizona, and he did that on the weekends and delivered newspapers by air to outlying areas.
So he could really throw the newspaper in your rose bush, couldn't he, from the air. We have to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more about Piedmont Airlines with Richard Eller, who is a professor of history at Catawba Valley Community College, Ronnie Macklin, and Howard Miller, who was former director of maintenance and a former pilot for Piedmont. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFA. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Anderson Heating and Cooling, full-service air conditioning installation and repair, serving residential communities for more than 28 years. Information at 704-596-2525. Young people came out in record numbers 4 years ago to elect Barack Obama as president, but polls show that that may not be the case this time around. Yet, we are going to meet two young people who are engaged in politics still. One is a Republican, one is a Democrat, both in their 20s, both our delegates to their respective party conventions. We'll get their thoughts about what turns them on about politics, their thoughts on the political process, the candidates, the issues, and more tomorrow at 9. And if you'd like to share some memories about Piedmont Airlines, now's your time, 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, or online, wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. Coming right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the role of wind in U.S. energy policy is a hot-button issue in the presidential campaign. The politics of wind power, its potential to create jobs, and the debate over tax incentives.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Piedmont Airlines, looking back a little bit with the author of Piedmont Airlines, A Complete History, 1948 to 1989, and also the producer of a documentary about Piedmont called Speed Bird, Richard Eller. Ronnie Macklin's a former director of maintenance there, and Howard Miller, a former pilot. They both started with Piedmont Airlines early on in the 1950s. The airline itself started in 1948. It was kind of a puddle jumper, literally, as an airline. But in 1948, what other airlines were flying, and where were they going, and what was air travel like in 1948?
Eastern Airlines was big in this area,
uh-huh.
Especially Charlotte. And that's the only – and then there was another little airline called Capital. Which
I remember them.
Yeah, which eventually was merged into United Airlines.
Uh-huh.
So those are about the only two airlines.
But what about TWA, Pan Am?
We didn't have them in here.
In this area?
No, not this
area. We were
area.
Too small for them.
Yes.
And that was the whole reason behind Piedmont, wasn't it? To fill in yes. the gaps that the bigger airlines
well,
didn't want to deal with.
The airlines, if you wanted to go from Miami to New York, mm-hmm. you were well taken care of.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to go from Wilmington to Cincinnati, you couldn't go there. Couldn't do that.
Now, I think this is in the documentary. I don't know where else I would have gotten this, but that because there were sometimes so many stops along the way that Piedmont would literally land the airplane, turn off the engine on the exit side of the airplane, open the door, let people out, unload the baggage, load new baggage, let people in, turn the engine back on, close the door, and take off all in 3 minutes.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's right. In fact, we had some stations we went through in 2 minutes.
That's amazing. Is this the DC-3 aircraft? That
DC-3.
Helped? Right.
24
yeah,
people?
Yeah.
That's an old prop plane.
Yes.
Right? Right. How high did these prop planes fly?
Well, they were unpressurized.
Right.
And we'd usually fly in this area at 2,500 or 3,500. And going across the mountains, we'd have to get up to 6,000 or 7,000 feet. And,
so you could reach up and touch these planes as they
yes,
went up.
Yes, you could. And we're not very fast either.
What kind of a ride did it give the passenger? I mean, the pilots don't care because they're you love to fly, and it shows. That's an old slogan.
Actually, a DC-3 was pretty smooth.
It
rode rough air quite well.
But now I read yesterday or heard yesterday that from the passenger's point of view, particularly going over the mountains, mm-hmm. as you said, these cabins were not pressurized as right. today's planes are. They weren't air-conditioned either.
Exactly.
They weren't particularly well heated. So in the wintertime at altitude, it could get really cold in the cabin, couldn't it?
Right.
I'll have to tell one. We had an airplane to go from Winston to New York, and it was to haul some bank people up there. And when they left in the morning, there was ice on the door of the air stair on that frame.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came back that night, that ice was still there. So I think we hauled them twice. There was no more. That was the end of it.
You didn't de-ice the airplanes back then?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Definitely, yeah.
The wings, but not the door frame. Speedbird is the name of this documentary. Tell me why.
I was intrigued by the fact that the Piedmont folks threw that word around pretty heftily, but nobody really knows what it Man, I didn't know what it meant, but it is the name of the logo for Piedmont Airlines. And I'd wanted to call the book that, and publishers said no, so I thought when I got the opportunity to do the documentary, I can call it what I want to.
You're the second author that has told me that. They got a second opportunity to tell their story in another form, and the publisher said no, and so the second opportunity, they got to put their title on it.
Right, yeah.
The logo that you talk about for Piedmont Airlines is this blue. It looks like a bird, but it's kind of a stylized bird with a thin fuselage at the bottom and a wing that goes up in the air on a diagonal with three separate lines in it. And I just typed in the word speedbird. You can do all kinds of things on the internet now, you know. And I typed in the word speedbird, and it's also the name of the logo for British Airways.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know, I'd run into that. But
And their bird looks not unlike Piedmont's, and I'm wondering if they copied it.
Who's is who? Who was first?
Well, Piedmont was, that's true. Who knows when they actually started? But you say in the documentary, and many people say this in the documentary, Piedmont was more than a business. It was a personal statement by its employees to give their best and earn the reputation as the can-do airline. Later on in the documentary, you talk about how the expansion of U.S. Airways and the winning of the award in 1984 as the best airline in the country really was meant something to employees who had been there for a long time, because finally they could hold their heads high. They weren't this up-and-coming airline. They had made it. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
But is there something about being up-and-coming as opposed to already being at the top of the heap that makes you keep striving?
I've already talked about it once, but about 1985, the FAA did a audit of all major airlines, and it was very drastic. And I was handed the job of taking care of that and making sure we didn't do bad. And the lowest airline, major airline, had $1.7 million fine. And my superior says, you're going to be less than that or you're not going to be here. He didn't use those words, but I understood what he said. And so he gave me complete control, though. I says, I can't do it without controlling everything. And he says, you've got it. So that was the end of that. I rewrote a lot of manuals, did a lot of stuff, everything else. And I even hired the FAA that we had for years to come and make sure I was doing everything like I was supposed to. And he did that. And then the auditors came in. You couldn't get the auditors in this room. There were that many.
Right.
And each one had a job to do. And then once he did it, we left. And one of my stories is this man came in and says, I'm going to do outside stations, and I'm going to pick the outside station. And then if you pass, then the audit's over. If you don't pass, there's 100% inspection of every station you have. And I said,
And the station was what? What's a station?
A station is where mechanics are based.
Okay.
And there's quite about 10 or 12 of them.
Okay.
So I says, well, you pick the place you want to go, because if I do it, you'll think I'm trying to bait you. And he says, Miami. And I says, you picked the wrong one. There's no better station than Miami. And you go down there. So he left. It was cold. Yeah. That's why he went to
That's
Miami.
Right.
And he went down there. And about 4 days later, he called me and he says, the audit's over. And he says, your men here are changing an engine, and they're short, and I'd like to work on that engine to help them finish it. And then I'll be back after that. But the audit's over, and you don't need to worry about it.
Wow.
And I says, thank you.
And this was what year?
Must have been about 85 or 86.
Okay, 1985. But this kind of a record of scrupulousness with regard to towing the line and being the best goes way, way back, because I understand that after you finally got certification as an airline in the early days, because it took a long time to be allowed to fly. The Civil Aeronautics Board took their took their time in saying in 1948, yeah, you can fly. And then another airline based in Charlotte, I think it was State Airlines, was trying to get up and started, and the contract was for the flights were given to Piedmont, not to them, and so they took it to court, and it was in court for over a year until the Supreme Court finally said, yes, you can fly. But shortly thereafter, when it came up time to be recertified by the CAB, the CAB not only recertified them, they extended the period of certification. Is that correct, Richard?
They did, yeah, for 7 years, yeah.
Because?
Because of the exemplary way that Piedmont ran their operation. You know, they said that it was a model for other people, you know, other airlines.
And so they extended it so that other airlines would try to be as good as Piedmont and try to qualify for this super long extension of the right to fly.
Yeah, while they were still doing that, eventually they stopped the recertification process.
Now, that obviously came from the head guy, this attitude, this demand to be excellent. What did he demand of you as pilots, Tom Davis?
Well, they hired a lot of military pilots, but civilian pilots too. I was a civilian pilot trained. I was supposed to train in World War II, and I was in the cadet program. My twin brother and I, his name was Harold, and we were in the aviation cadet program of World War II, but the war ended before we got into flight training.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to school in Oklahoma to Spartan School of Aeronautics to get qualified as mechanics and pilots. And we both came back and ran Miller Airport at Mooresville and Miller Airport at Statesville. Then we went to work with Piedmont Airlines in 1954, the same day.
Hmm. And I'm told, I assume this is a true story, because you were twins, you had no middle names for some reason. And at Piedmont, you had to have a middle initial to get paid.
Yes.
So?
Mr. Saunders, Zeke Saunders, who hired us, came in the classroom, the DC-3 classroom where we were taking our initial training, and said, do you boys have a middle name or middle initial? We both said, no, we don't. And he said, well, I'm going to give you a middle initial because all the paychecks are given out with initials and last name, and we can't have two paychecks with H. Miller. And Harold, we give you the second letter of your first name, and you'll be H.A. Miller. Howard, you'll be second letter of your first name, and you'll be H.O. Miller. So that's the way we got the middle initials.
So you became Ha-Ha and Ho-Ho.
Exactly.
Let's take a couple of phone calls here. Tom, who is en route to the airport, welcome to the program, Tom.
Thank you for taking my call. Hey, Captain Miller, yes, I am en route to the fly a trip out of Charlotte. Just wanted to comment, I agree with what you guys have said. After I was on probation based out of Greensboro, Piedmont was a kind of airline where I got a call at 1 in the morning Christmas Day, and I wanted to know if I could fly a trip. And the whole atmosphere there was, yes, I would love to. And the people that I worked with had the can-do spirit of what can we do to help to make this airline successful. And that's one of the big things that I miss of flying for Piedmont.
And who are you flying for today?
U.S. Airways.
Okay. That's all right. I mean, yeah. You know, you were absorbed. I would ask you questions about the clash of corporate cultures, but you're going to work, so I won't.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
All right.
Bye-bye. We go to Thomas in Chester. Hey, Thomas. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to share a true and hopefully humorous experience I had on Piedmont in the late 80s. I flew first class from Charlotte to San Francisco. I had nothing to do that day other than to get to San Francisco. So I was seated in first class, and I was given all sorts of alcoholic beverages, and I was feeling no pain, so to speak, and I think the stewardess had one eye on me. When I landed in San Francisco, I commented to her that I had never been treated so nicely in any situation in any part of the world that I had ever been to. The food was fantastic. The drink was fantastic, so much so that I would like very much not to get off the plane. And she did not find my comment humorous, although it was intended to be such. And she said, "Sir, unless you get off this plane right now, I'll be forced to call the San Francisco police. So I said, I'm terribly sorry. The joke has gone awry. I'll be happy to leave. But the treatment that I received on that flight was better than any first-class treatment I have ever received.
Wow.
But ever since then, I've kept my humor in check.
Thank you for your call, Thomas. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
Good story. There's another story that I learned from watching your documentary about Piedmont when it got its first coast-to-coast flight, which terminated in Los Angeles. Where did it start? Here? Charlotte?
Yes, I think so. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And at
correct.
The time you got that flight, although it was advertised as nonstop, you didn't have any long-range airplanes that could really make it across the country with no stops. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I flew one of those trips. I flew the second day.
Uh-huh.
The man on the first day had favorable winds, and he made it nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
I flew the second day, and I had to stop for fuel in Albuquerque. But we had Piedmont had arranged to give each passenger an envelope with a $100 bill if we had to make a fuel stop.
Yes, I want other airlines to hear this loud and clear. Piedmont, they didn't have to do this. You had to land in Albuquerque because you didn't have enough fuel to get across the country.
Yeah.
And I think you made the announcement that we have to land because of some technical thing, but the stewardess said, we'll make you very happy.
Exactly.
And they walk down the aisle and hand out $100 bills to every single passenger.
Every passenger.
I want to take that flight every time.
Nobody complained.
I would think not.
They almost made schedule also.
Yes, they didn't land very much later than they normally would have.
That's right. Yeah.
Which is also phenomenal. Nancy in Charlotte, thank you for joining us.
Hi. I don't know if you remember that Piedmont used to fly directly to Princeton, New Jersey.
Mm-mm. Did you?
Say that again.
Princeton, New Jersey.
Did you fly to Princeton, New Jersey? No? Maybe you're remembering incorrectly, Nancy. Tell me where it started. Where did the flight begin?
Oh, right here in Charlotte. I worked with the Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and we took blood samples for people who wanted their blood tested in the Princeton Bio Center in New Jersey. It was about 5 minutes from the airport in Princeton. And your pilot here took our blood samples, all packed in ice, put it in the cockpit, and flew it up there for us.
And what year was this?
Late 80s.
Hmm.
Could that have been a charter?
It could have been. I retired.
I don't think so, because he did it regularly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's certainly possible, I suppose. Yeah. You can't know everything, can you?
No.
Thank you for your call, Nancy. I appreciate it. We have a couple of people who have been chiming in on Facebook and Twitter and our email. Mike on Facebook remembers Piedmont as a NASCAR sponsor. You had a car for a while.
Exactly.
Yep. Why?
I think that's an idea from the 80s to get more, you know, as an advertising tool that gets to a market that Piedmont wanted to, to develop.
And they have that car. Patrick on Facebook said, when I heard the phrase beloved airline in your promotions for this show, I thought I must surely have misheard. Was there a time when airlines were beloved? And the answer to that question is unequivocally yes. We have to take a break. We're going to come back with more with Howard Miller, a former pilot for Piedmont, Ronnie Macklin, former director of maintenance who wore many hats in his long career there, and Richard Eller, professor of history and the head of the social science department at Catawba Valley Community College, author of Piedmont Airlines, A Complete History, 1948 to 89, and Speedbirds, the documentary. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Garage Door Guru, providing local, comprehensive garage door service for over 11 years, including repairs and door installations, now offering Herman Garage Doors. Details at GoGarageDoorGuru.com. The role of wind in U.S. energy policy is a hot-button issue in the presidential campaign. Diane and her guests discuss the politics of wind power, its potential to create jobs, and the debate over tax incentives for that industry. Coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, we are reminiscing about Piedmont, the airline that could. forgot the slogan. We'll find out what the slogan is in a few minutes here. But Piedmont Airlines, if you'd like to join our conversation, maybe you have some reminiscences about flying, or maybe you've worked for them, 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, which is 9323, or WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. Don't go away. 30 seconds back.
I bet when you talk about your day at work, it doesn't go like this.
What have you accomplished so far?
Good God, we've got people breakdancing, we've got people talking on payphones, we stole candy from a baby.
How did that go over?
That went over fine. This is New York.
I'm Kai. Rizdal companies try their best to make work fun. That's next time on Marketplace from APM. That's a fun place.
That's Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE. Listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Piedmont Airlines, looking back with Richard Eller, who's written a book and done a documentary on this at Catawba Valley Community College. Ronnie Macklin, Howard Miller, former director of maintenance, former pilot with Piedmont Airlines. As I watched the documentary yesterday, it struck me how even in airlines, when industries begin, they begin small. And they begin with pockets all over the country until evidently the pattern is they come together, and suddenly we have this gargantuan industry with a couple of owners running everything. But as it grows, they're kind of making it up as they go along. The airline industry was part of that. You guys were making it up as you went along. You were better than some other airlines that weren't as good as you. We just talked off the air about how at one point you bought 17 airplanes, I think it was 17 airplanes, from TWA for $400,000 because the new versions of what you wanted to buy were $1 million each, and that was too much money. Well, I don't think people think about airlines buying used airplanes and flying them with new paint. Tell me why that was considered safe. I mean, why was TWA getting rid of them if you were buying them?
Yeah, it was an airplane that we had the F-27, mm-hmm. which took us, I'd say, 2 or 3 years to get the bugs out of it and get it flying like it was supposed to fly.
What does that mean, a bug?
Something's wrong with the airplane.
That's comforting.
The pilots don't like. And the passengers don't like. We finally got over that. But anyway, the Martins, we put the Martins in service the day we got them, some of them. And we put one in training, the pilots, and it flew 8 hours a day, all day and all night, and never had a problem. So it was a good airplane.
You know, you were a pilot for the airline from 53 or 54 on, Howard Miller. But pilots back then, as I understand it, also kind of had to be mechanics. Didn't the mechanics teach the pilots how to fly the plane or how the plane was built?
Yeah, we had all mechanics as as instructors, and they really got into how it should be.
This also fascinated me. You had mechanics as instructors. I'm wondering why mechanics, first of all. But secondly, all the pilots knew how to fly. So what was the instruction about? What did you need instruction for?
You have systems like the hydraulic system. And F-27 had air system for gear and flaps. So they taught everything they could about the systems so that you really understood it well.
Yeah, the idea was if you knew how to build that plane, mm-hmm. if an emergency came, you'd know enough, you know, you'd know something that a run-of-the-mill pilot wouldn't know to counter that emergency.
Or if you got on the radio with somebody and they could say the doohickey to the left of the red bolt, turn that, you'd know where that is took the airplane.
The main purpose of doing that, though, was the pilots are going to depend on the maintenance person telling them what's wrong with the airplane or what's not wrong with it. Uh-huh. If they went to school with him and they know him, the relationship is totally different.
Yeah, the trust level there was pretty high.
Now, both of you started in the prop era and went through into the jet age of air travel. Talk to me about the transition. Was that an easy transition, a difficult transition? Was it exciting because suddenly the airplanes were higher, they were pressurized, they were faster? Talk about it.
No, that was no problem. Most fellows didn't have any problem with school and the checkout because it was, you know, we're going from unpressurized airplanes to pressurized airplanes. And actually, the Martin 404 was pressurized. But the jets were pretty easy, and we had excellent training.
And Piedmont was late to jets, and that's one of the reasons they bought those Martins, is because TWA in the early 60s was getting into the jet era. Mm-hmm. Well, you could buy props still cheaper than you could the jets, and so Piedmont didn't get into jets until the very late 60s.
Exactly.
Now, you were – well, I'll move on to a question from a listener here. Paul on Facebook flew Piedmont to Charlotte in 83 for a job interview at Spirit Square, where we sit this morning. I was so impressed with the service and friendly nature that I thought, hey, this is going to be a great place to live, and we are still here. Brad tweets, my mom started as a Piedmont flight attendant when I was in the first grade. Great memories of flying and drinking Piedmont Punch. What was Piedmont Punch? It was hydraulic fuel, wasn't it? Come on, be honest.
No. It was real punch.
Bill from Matthew says, I remember flying to Charlotte from Michigan on Piedmont for a job interview. What made the trip memorable for me was that it was the day after the Piedmont crash in Charlotte. I believe it would have been in August or September of 74. Is this tragedy mentioned in your book documentary? Yes, it is, isn't it?
Yes.
There were only four in the whole history of Piedmont. There were only four crashes, and several of them. One of them, the first one, was never determined what the cause was. One was because a Cessna crashed into the airplane through no fault of Piedmont's. It was the Cessna's pilot's fault.
Right, in Asheville, yeah.
Yeah. Warren writes, in 1981 and 82, I worked for Ween Alaska, Air Alaska, a regional airline based in Anchorage that had a reputation in Alaska and the Northwest similar to that of Piedmont. I became close to the president of that airline, Ray Peterson, and he used to speak fondly of meeting Tom Davis at a gathering called Conquistadores del Cielo, a fly-in gathering in Wyoming that's been going on since the 1930s. Do you know about that group, and can you say a few words about it?
They were one of the first to buy an F-27, and we helped them get over the problems with the F-27 as best we could. They're very nice people.
Okay. Tim writes, I'm sure I'm not the only one who could reminisce about Piedmont Airlines. I would note, however, that what many people don't realize is that Piedmont often flew by the seat of its pants. Yes, they had a do-anything-but-the-customer approach. However, that allowed for lack of continuity at gates and ticket counters, reservations, in-flight, and more. My training at Piedmont consisted of 2 hours training by someone who knew very little about ticketing. Because I came from Eastern Airlines to Piedmont, I was thrust onto the ticket counter with little to no training. When Piedmont became U.S. Airways, my salary nearly doubled. I was no longer required to do training on my own time as they did at Piedmont. I say what you will about U.S. Air and U.S. Airways, they are a good company. And I would add that I had 4 weeks of intensive training at Eastern compared to 2 hours at Piedmont. I continue to hear about the love of Piedmont. Basically, you would hear the same things about Western, Ozark, Republic, or any regional airline. To that point, Piedmont was a nice airline, but would never fit into today's travel environment. Talk about it. I don't want to put you on the spot, guys, because you work for Piedmont. You have love in your heart for them. So, Richard, address that. Because, you know, memories are memories. They're not always accurate.
Yeah, it wasn't a perfect airline by any stretch of the imagination. I interviewed a person who flew a lot with Piedmont and referred to the YS-11 as a vomit comet, that it caused stomach upset when it got to certain altitudes and that sort of thing. But he stayed with Piedmont because of the relationship that he built with the flight attendants there, because he saw them every Monday and every Friday as he was coming back home. So there was that relationship, you know, before the era of the passenger who came for vacation. You had a lot of businessmen on it, and so that was the bread and butter of Piedmont. But one of the interesting things I find is if you talk to a lot of Piedmont employees, and this is not the crowd that came in the 50s. It's sometimes the 70s and 80s. They said that though their wages for U.S. Air would go up, and you know, in the case you mentioned, double, they still would rather work for Piedmont. And granted, it had, you know, it was sort of a seat of the pants at times sort of airlines, but for a lot of people, that's what made it fun. I mean, Eddie Culler used to talk about the fact that I forget how many years he worked there, because he was like employee two or three. He never missed a day.
And of course, when Piedmont grew to be a coast-to-coast airlines and it became Airline of the Year in 1984 and became the best airline in the country in 1984, surely that meant that things had changed. The corporate leadership had changed by then. It was becoming a modern airline, as all the other airlines were, because they had to become different than they were in the 50s and 60s, correct?
Yeah, the Bill Howard era was different.
A deafening silence falls on the crowd.
Well, you know, Tom Davis goes through mandatory retirement at 65 in the early 80s, and Bill Howard comes along, and he changes the airline. Now, ultimately, all those events led to the buyout from U.S. Air. But it did become, in some ways, a very different airline. That's where the Charlotte Hub idea came from. That's when they went to Baltimore for a hub, Dayton. All those big changes.
Also, according to the U.S. Department of Transportation, Piedmont Airlines, this is the U.S. Department of Transportation talking here, Piedmont Airlines grew from the smallest of 17 local and trunk airlines to become the sixth largest airline in the U.S. in terms of passengers carried, flying over 200 jet aircraft from L.A. to London, and more revenue passengers annually than British Airways, Pan Am, or TWA, while consistently placing in the top three U.S. flag carriers with the fewest passenger complaints. To me, that says you kind of made it in the modern world.
Yeah, I wasn't in on any of the London flights. I retired before that.
All right, let's take a couple more phone calls here. Austin in Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I have a story. I'm in my 50s, and I grew up in Charlotte. And I remember I must have been a spoiled child, because one time I was going to fly Piedmont from Charlotte to Greensboro, and I said, "Mother, that plane has propellers." And she said, "Do you think I'd put you on a plane that wasn't safe?" Well, we get on the plane. We're sitting on the tarmac for quite a while. And finally, two very dapper-looking service guys get on the plane and say, "Does anyone know how to put water on this plane?" I promise you, one of the passengers got off the plane to help put water on the plane. Am I misremembering this?
Is that conceivable?
I would guess it's so. I don't know, but yes, they would have to know where do you put the water and how do you get it in the airplane.
Because you were in charge of quality control at one point, were you not?
But not this area.
Thanks for your call. You wanted to talk about how as Piedmont grew, one of the ways it became able to grow was through its association with Charlotte. I'm not sure many people understand that.
Right. Piedmont was trying to grow, and the city of Charlotte, Mr. Davis sent me down to Charlotte and said, "Find out what those people want to do." And we had this small meeting, and they said, "We need an air, we would like to have," Piedmont said this, "we would like to have a six-bay hangar that would hold a 27, that's a bigger airplane and a higher airplane. And the man didn't bat an eye. He says, "If that's what you want, that's what you'll get." And we even got more than that. So Charlotte was a big part of our growth and always has been.
And evidently vice versa when it comes to putting us on the map. Bruce in Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Morning.
The lady that thought that she was sending her stuff to Princeton, I think that was probably Trenton. I flew to Trenton in F-28 in the late 80s. There was a time there when I think it was just after the merger, but before the operational joint up or whatever it was called, that it seemed like we were on a quest to go to every capital city in the eastern United States. We were going to Montgomery and Austin and Trenton and Harrisburg in F-28s. It was pretty heady time. The main point I wanted to make, though, is that I think that a lot of what made Piedmont people work the way they did is we always knew that Mr. Davis valued the employees. And it's something that promptly went away in 1989, frankly. Even after Mr. Howard came along, it was we still knew that the people in Winston, like I said, they valued the employees. We weren't just numbers.
Yeah, you point out in the documentary that that Piedmont Airlines employees felt that they really had joined a family, that they were treated like family, and that the airline, unlike most other airlines, and this is usually a pejorative term, but in this case it's not, the airline was built on nepotism.
Yeah, they loved it. Yeah. And made a strong case for it, that if they knew the husband and sometimes the wife who worked there, they could be assured that the kid was going to be a good employee.
And there's probably a lot of truth in that.
It makes some sense, yeah. And plus, the other thing about Mr. Davis is he knew, nobody knows how he did it, but he knew the name of every employee for Piedmont he encountered. and sometimes after not seeing them for years.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. Mary in Statesville, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I am so excited. I'm from Scranton originally, and I think it was Allegheny first before it became Piedmont, or Allegheny was folded into Piedmont.
Allegheny became U.S. Air, which bought Piedmont.
Oh, okay.
And became U.S. Airways.
Anyway, that was the best. My daughter and I used to fly back and forth from Chicago to Avoca, Scranton-Wilkes-Barre.
So you're talking about Allegheny, right?
Yeah, and then from Allegheny down from Scranton, rather, to Charlotte.
Okay.
But I just remember everybody being so nice and so good to my daughter, and we still have our wings. Our Piedmont wings.
Oh, neat. Well, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Let's talk a little bit before we run out of time about the merger, because the merger brought these two disparate airlines, Allegheny, which became U.S. Air, together with Piedmont, and became, for a while, they flew under the two names, and then slowly the Piedmont name disappeared. But it wasn't the same airline. The corporate culture was different, as that stewardess at the beginning of the show that I referenced will tell you. It was different. How difficult was it for Piedmont people to adjust to U.S. Air?
From what everybody says, it was very difficult
because
of the corporate culture was just very different. There was money spent on things that Piedmont people would do for themselves. Because they were, they had
thrifty.
And it was instilled in them. And, a plane would sit out and it had something wrong with it. And, union work rules required that people not do that. And Piedmont people got frustrated over it. I mean, they tended to refer to their new employer as useless air.
And they weren't the only ones. Richard Eller, professor of history and head of the social science department of Catawba Valley Community College, author of Piedmont Airlines, A Complete History, 1948 to 89, and the producer of Speedbird, the documentary. Ronnie Macklin, former director of maintenance for the airline, and Howard Miller, a former pilot. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The hour.
Pleasure.
Glad to be here.
And thank you for Piedmont. I love that airline.
Right.